The Australian PGA underway there in Brisbane, and early scores. Nick Flanagan and Danish player Rasmus Højgaard, 2 under par through 3 holes. Very early leaders. Aaron Wilkin coming off his win in the Queensland PGA last week, 1 under through 4 holes, as is Adam Scott, 1 under through 4 holes as well. Cam Smith's out on course, and he's just made a bogey. The favourite to win the tournament, 1 over through 4 holes, but very early days there. The Australian PGA this weekend, Adam Benghili's there, so we'll chat to him tomorrow to get the latest. And Gowie earlier this morning, he tipped for us Minwoo Lee, and his roughie was Maverick Antcliffe for the Australian PGA this weekend, and it rolls into the Australian Open next weekend as they battle for the Stonehaven Cup. And the results of the World Cup overnight, well, the match that just was completed this morning, Belgium beat Canada 1-0. Morocco and Croatia finished scoreless. Spain absolutely obliterated Costa Rica 7-0. But the big shock, another one, after we had Saudi Arabia beating Argentina yesterday, Japan have beaten Germany 2-1. And, well, there was a protest from the Germans just after the anthems as they posed for their team photo before kickoff. They, covered their mouths to protest against FIFA silencing them. And the Denmark side is, Danish footballers threatened to pull out of FIFA. So a lot of politics going on at the sidelines at the World Cup there as well. As for the Socceroos, as they gear up for their match against Tunisia on Saturday evening our time, well, Graham Arnold, he just conceded bigger, faster, stronger, didn't he, yesterday after the French beat us 4-1. We're going to speak to Archie Thompson shortly, former Socceroo, Melbourne Victory royalty, of course. Just in the cricket, the PM's 11 against the West Indies, 9 for 297. And it was Matty Renshaw and Marcus Harris at the top of the order. They put on 134 for the first wicket. Renshaw eventually dismissed for 81. Harris, 73. Peter Hanscom made 55. In the Sheffield Shield, New South Wales yesterday were rolled for 93 at the SCG by WA. WA in their first dig made 233. So it's a pretty tricky pitch, clearly. But Pup, 93. Top score was Daniel Hughes, 30. Baxter Holt made 16. And then extras made 10.
Not a good day for Cricket Australia, for Cricket New South Wales. Cricket Australia. Well, used to think strong New South Wales is strong Australia. But, yeah, it's been a poor season, Mido, to be honest, so far. I think we're coming last on the Shield ladder. Yeah, disappointing because there's still some talent in that team. Now, I didn't see the pitch, so I've got to be careful to comment too much on the bowled out for 93. Conditions might be poor, might be hard, but either way, I can't imagine. I can't see how, you know, New South Wales can be coming last in any competition. We've got so much talent to choose from. You know, we're picking the right players. Are the players not standing up? Are we giving guys too much opportunity? Are we not giving them enough opportunity? I don't know. I don't know what the issue is, but it's a sad place for New South Wales cricket if we're finishing last or coming last. We need to turn that around quick, smart.
Loz, Adam Reynolds has spoken to News Corp, the Broncos captain. He's indicated Reece Walsh is looking pretty good at the back amidst, Kevin Walters has said that there's competition. He's not guaranteed anyone the number one jersey there at Red Hill. Reynolds added that he doesn't think there's any point rushing Selwyn Cobbo to fullback because he's so young and is such a good finisher. But you've got Herbie Farmworth there who wants to play fullback. Tessie New, who I guess is the incumbent at fullback there, but has been... Well, it's indicated he can look elsewhere as well. But, I mean, if you're getting Reece Walsh back there, he's surely the fullback there at the Broncos come round one.
At this stage, he probably is. But things can change pretty quickly. Selwyn Cobbo had an outstanding year last season, and I see him as being a long-term fullback or a long-term centre. I think, you know, what he does on the wing is exceptional, but I think you can get far more value out of him, in particular playing at the back of the field. But I just don't know whether he'd have the aerobic capacity just at this stage and his ability to organise defensive lines, which are so important today in the modern game. But Reece Walsh, he's now had 2 seasons of first grade, and we all know he's got untapped ability. It's a matter of Reece training hard and understanding that he needs to inject himself into the game on all occasions, but also knowing that the little simple plays are just as effective as the big plays. I think sometimes young blokes, when they come in, when they've got all this talent, they think they can get away with doing the big plays that they've gotten away with coming through the junior system. That's not always the case when you get to this level, first grade level. You've got to make sure you've got a strong work ethic, great basic skill level. You know, and when I mean basic skill level, you know, being able to play, four on threes down short sides. Not everyone can do that. Organising defensive systems, knowing when to burn the line, knowing when to stay out of the line, helping out your halves, helping out your hooker if they kick, about where the fullback is in the opposition. You know, helping out their kicking game, help organising structures a little bit wider of the ruck when the halves and 5/8s are tied up in close, and looking after their forward. So there's a lot of things that a fullback needs to do, and it just doesn't happen overnight. But he's had now time in the system where he should have learnt all that, but it's about him being fit enough to be able to continue to push himself and realise he's got to inject himself into the game at all times.
On the Broncos as well, prop Tom Flegler, story yesterday. He's off contract next year, but he's set to, according to a report yesterday, reject a six-year offer worth on average $675,000 a season from Manly to stay at the Broncos. Of course, he has a link to Anthony Seibold from when Seibold coached the Broncos. So with Payne Haas also reinforcing his commitment thereafter, well, he threatened to leave, didn't he, in the middle of last season. Then he got the likes of Pat Carrigan there. I mean, they got the nucleus of a really strong young forward pack as well, don't they, the Broncos, Loz? So you want that sort of youth in your forward pack to really build around. Flegler's aware, though, he needs to watch his discipline, which he's had some issues with, but he doesn't plan to tone down the aggression. But so I'm just looking at the Broncos' futures for next year. With Tad, they're $15 to win the premiership, so they're on the eighth line of betting. They're $3.50 to make the top four. And I saw $1.55 to make the top eight, and you thought, gee, that's short for a side I'm not sure I completely trust. But, you know, you take the last, what, 5-6 weeks out of the season we've just had, and, you know, they were threatening top four for a long, long time.
They were, you know. It wouldn't surprise me whether they're the massive improvers this season. This is the team that we all sit back and go, oh, geez, why didn't we see this coming? Because when you look at their forward pack, they've got some of the best young forwards in the game. They've got some of the best young backs in the game, and then you've got an experienced half like Adam Reynolds. So it wouldn't surprise if they finish top four. But the pressure will be on for them to perform straight away, given the way they ended the season this year, because they were travelling nicely, and then things happened and they just didn't recover. But Patrick Carrigan was a big loss for them. But you look at their forward pack. You've got Flegler. You've got Carrigan. You've got Payne Haas. Now, they're three guys that are representative standard forwards and all play in the middle and are all tough and all very, very skillful. So I'm expecting the Broncos to make the eight next season, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if they finish top four.
On Clarkie's Tigers, I see Tim Sheens in the club haven't mucked around with the 19-year-old forward, Justin Matamua, who made his debut against Parramatta in round 17 this year. He's a Campbelltown junior. He was on a development contract, and he's been upgraded straight away to the NRL roster heading into season 2023. And I guess
well, they've spoken about their juniors, Middo, haven't they, exactly. The Tigers? Mm. And they've spoken about how they need to keep them. And the thing with the Tigers and a lot of clubs that have a good junior system, it's identifying the right ones to keep, because you don't want to let the good ones slip from under your guard. I know you can't keep them all, but that's where your talent identification program is so important. And the coaches and people that do your recruiting have to get it right, because the last thing that people want to see is a young man that's been in their system get an opportunity somewhere else. So that's the challenge for the Tigers when they've been talking about having all these good young players coming through and will be ready in, you know, 18 months, 2-3 years' time. they've got to make sure that they identify the right ones, put the time and effort into those players, and then they will have success down the track.
Jackson Hastings has spoken for the first time since he joined the Newcastle Knights. 26 years of age, he reckons he won't hit his peak as a halfback until he's between 28 and 30. He lauded Andrew Johns as his childhood idol, who's had an incredible impact on his career. But what do you make of that, Loz? 26 years of age, he's played a lot of footy now, reckons 28 to 30 is when he'll really hit his straps.
I can understand why he's thinking like that, because he's been out of the NRL. Maybe a little bit earlier, if you've been in the system for a long period of time, you started as 17, 18-year-old, probably once you start to get 100, 150 games as a first grader, you should be starting to hit your peak. There's a lot of things that he'll learn, and no doubt he'll learn a lot off Joey Johns. But he's the type of player that Newcastle need, because he's an on-the-ball type halfback. He likes to get his hands on the football. He likes to be in control. And I think that's when he plays his best football, when he knows he's in charge. And what it'll also do, it'll free up Kalyn Ponga. So Kalyn won't have that responsibility, and he won't feel like he has to do it all the time. Whereas I think last year when Kalyn played, he would have been sitting there watching what was unfolding and thinking, geez, is this all we've got? I need to do something here. And he puts himself into the game at the wrong time. And we've seen it at Origin level. When he doesn't have to have that responsibility and he can pick and choose his moments and everyone else is doing their job, that's when he's so effective. And for me, I think Jackson Hastings will be just as important to Newcastle as he will be for Kalyn Ponga's development as a player.
$51 to win the premiership with TAB Newcastle. They're $6 to make the top eight, but they're also $6 for most losses, which is second favourite behind the Dolphins in that market. We'll take a quick break. Give us a call, 13 53 53. Send us a text, 0419 767 272. Drummond Golf is Australia's biggest, so we're having Australia's biggest Black Friday golf sale. It's so big, our Black Friday sale doesn't end until Tuesday. You'll find huge savings store-wide on our great range of leading golf brands, with up to 50% off golf balls, up to 33% off buggies, up to 25% off golf bags, and so much more. So come and shop in-store or online at drummondgolf.com.au. Just don't miss Australia's biggest Black Friday golf sale, on now only at Drummond Golf. And in that Australian PGA, just another birdie for Erasmus Højgaard, the Danish player. He's 3-under through four holes, leading in the early stages. Nick Flanagan, 2-under. And Adam Scott, 1-under par. But Cam Smith, he's had an early bogey to be 1-over. And Cam Davis, 2-over. Some of the early scores there at Royal Queensland. Pup, I've just seen that Jofra Archer's made a comeback. There's a name I'd totally forgotten about. Shouldn't forget about him, considering his impact in his early days playing for England, but obviously suffered some significant injuries. An elbow surgery, I believe he had, some stress fractures as well, but they're playing against England. He's playing for the England Lions against England just in a warm-up game ahead of their tour of Pakistan. I think he bowled 9 overs, none for 38, but watching his progress back is going to be one heading towards next winter for us Ashes over there, because we know that he is the point of difference. They were sorely missing last summer here in Australia.
Yep, for sure, buddy. I think there's two things that he'll have in his mind, Jofra Archer. One will be the IPL, where I think he gets $2 million, and the other one will be the Ashes against Australia, where he, well, I remember he hit Steve Smith in the head. That was really nasty. So, yeah, it'll be slow and steady for him, but he's a superstar. Like a lot of young quicks, they go through a number of different injuries. He's been out for a long time, so he'll have to give himself, his body, his mind, some time to slowly get back into it and get back to his best. But if he does, it's going to be a challenge for the Aussies, that's for sure.
Okay, well, Loz, you're going to be leaving us soon because you're off to the airport, mate. A couple of days off over across the ditch.
Yeah, going across the ditch, mate. Looking forward to getting over there in New Zealand, although I've just looked at the weather forecast. It's not great, but sister-in-law's 60th, mate, so we thought we should be there to help her celebrate, and I'm sure we will. I'm sure we'll have a lovely weekend.
So we're going to have a production meeting in here about the multi, unless you're going to strong arm it through on your break.
No, I think you can take on that responsibility, although I said I might have one for Kembla. So I'm just waiting for the prices, Mido.
Okay.
I'm not going to say anything because they might tighten it up.
Okay, Dicker. Right. You're going to keep it a little
secret. Yeah, I'm going to keep it as a secret and see whether they know the horse I'm talking about.
I see one of your favourites that you had in the multi last week, Ray Thomas, writing in the Telegraph that Joe Pride is saving Brutality for the $2 million Group 2, the Ingham, on December 10 at Randwick. So Brutality going to be saved, going straight to that big race, which is the Old Villiers, isn't it? December 10 at Randwick. It initially was nommed for the Festival Stakes this weekend.
Yeah. I thought it was a...
No, it was a good run. It was a good run.
Yeah, it was. Sure. But obviously, you wanted to do better. But, it always gets back. But just to be that wide and then to finish home, it would have had to run amazing sectionals to win. But I don't know. Do you read anything into it about not having won on a good surface? Because I think his runs on good surfaces have been okay.
Yeah,
but he just had no luck.
You got to dig deeper into the form and look at his look at the patterns. He hasn't won on a good track. Interesting, isn't it? 13 starts for a second and two thirds on a good tracks. Brutality, but yeah, I mean that run last week, it was just so you could tell he was coming as he came around and hooked right out to the inside fence.
Yeah.
You could tell he was coming, and what did he finish? About 1.5 off the winner, Riadini, in a $1 million race. So that doesn't tell me he's a dart on a good track.
No, I know, but it just shows you when you're backing horses that like to get back, doesn't it?
It's the game you play.
You're hoping for luck. You're hoping that everything pans out. Whereas the ones, up on speed. I suppose even if you're up on speed, if you get control of a race, you're going to be hard to beat. But if you've got a couple of horses there, next to you and pushing you and testing you, sometimes they can over-race and go too hard. So, that's the attraction of racing, though, isn't it? You're thinking you can predict what happens, and you think that, you understand the game, but it always keeps tossing up different scenarios and different challenges to us.
Well, Loz, safe travels. You go and have a good break, and we'll see you next Tuesday.
Good on you, boys. Have a good weekend.
Fly safe, buddy.
Catch you next weekend.
Belgium 1, Canada 0 at the World Cup this morning. Last night, Morocco and Croatia finished scoreless. Japan beat Germany 2-1. Big upset, and Spain smashed Costa Rica 7-0 overnight. And in the Sydney Super Cup, Everton beat Western Sydney Wanderers 5-1 at Combank Stadium. Anthony Gordon scored a hat-trick for the Toffees. The golf, the latest scores there. Australian PGA underway. And Rasmus, as Cowboy tells us, Højgaard is how his surname is pronounced. Danish player. Well, he's just dropped a shot. So he's 2-under through 5 holes. Joined at the top of the leaderboard by Nick Flanagan and Corey Crawford. Adam Scott is 1-under through 6 holes. And Cam Smith, it's out on course. Just lost his score at the moment, but he was 1-over par. Early drop shot from the Aussie. I'll have to find his score and get back to you there, but we're going to speak to Lee Jamon shortly. No, yep, 1-over through 6 holes. Is Cam Smith. Lee Jamon from Cricket New South Wales shortly. Just you and me now, pup, with Lozer on his way to NZ for a bit of a break. We're going to be joined by Matt Burke, tomorrow.
Unreal.
And I see Michael Hooper's out as well for this Wales test. He's suffered, they found a concussion there as well. So we're without... they can barely field a squad for their final tour match this weekend. The Wallabies, their final match of that spring tour against the Welsh. So Burkey will join us tomorrow. We'll talk plenty of World Cup as well, obviously, heading into the Tunisia match on Saturday evening. Be joined by Mossy, and also Archie Thompson's going to join us tomorrow as well, the former Socceroo and A-League great, of course, with Melbourne victory. Just checking as well with the tennis. That's right, Australia through to this semi-final. Against Croatia was the other score I meant to give. So Croatia beat Spain 2-0 in the Davis Cup quarterfinals and will play Australia over the weekend for a spot in the final of the Davis Cup. And two rubbers to love, they beat Spain this morning. Now, Pup, this PM's 11 game, 9 for 297, the PM's 11. And at the top of the order, Matt Renshaw and Marcus Harris, 81 and 73 respectively. And we know that probably in 12 months' time, there could be spots there at the top of the order, and these two are, well, their names are going to be right up near the top of the list as far as, well, the next in waiting.
Yeah, 100%. I think both of them. I think Renshaw, for mine, is the one that he looks ready, Middo. He's been in great nick. He's batted in the middle order. He's gone back to the top of the order. He's improved his game against spin bowling. I think he looks ready. Harris keeps his place in the squad. I understand that. The advantage the Australian team's got is if something happens to an opener, they can bring Harris straight in there. Something happens to a middle order player, they can bring Harris to the top of the order and bat Khawaja in the middle. Labuschagne Smith there as well. So you've got plenty of experience in that top four. So that's the advantage they have. But for mine, I think Matt Renshaw is at the top of the tree in regards to pushing for selection. Wherever the next tour is, don't be surprised if he's on it. And if something happens to two of the openers this Australian summer, then I reckon he's going to get a crack. But they've stuck with Harris for now, which I understand as well. Nearly 300 runs, it might be too many against the West Indies, to be honest.
Okay, joining us is the Chief Executive of Cricket New South Wales, Lee Jamon. Lee, good morning to you.
Hi, good morning, guys. How are you?
Yeah, really well, thanks. Great to have you on the show again. And, we've got the Big Bash looming, of course. You've watched some, fair to say, underwhelming crowds for Australia games at the 2020 World Cup. And then, well, little interest, you'd have to say, in the one-day internationals against England. What do you think is wrong?
Well, good question. I think there's a lot of people asking that question right now. Let's put in the first of all into context, I suppose, the World Cup attendances and the migrant population into Australia is largely made up of South Asian communities now. So particularly in Sydney and Melbourne, we're seeing very large Indian, Pakistani, Nepalese communities come in, which on one hand is fantastic for cricket because they know cricket generally, and they're coming into our country. And I think we've seen that through the nationalistic sort of following that occurred during the World Cup. That those matches were really highly attended by their national followers. The Australian team, less so, and I don't actually have the answer to that, but what I do know is that it is concerning as we lead or have just gone into a one-day international series. Obviously, we're at the SCG on Saturday, I think 16,000 there, 15 at Adelaide and 10 at the MCG in matches that... I know a few of the players have been quoted as saying really lack some real relevance and context for them. So yeah, we have had a lot of cricket, but it is concerning in terms of the following. It's an opportunity. We need to really focus in on our burgeoning and changing population, but it is concerning. And as we head into BBL, our real challenge is to reignite the passion of people to attend BBL matches because they're so crucial to clubs and state associations.
Lee, what's happening at the moment with our Shield performances? Again, we've spoken about it all morning, and when I look through this New South Wales squad, I feel like there's still as good a talent in the squad as they've ever been. I think we've got some really gifted young cricketers. I think we've got enough experience with guys that have played for Australia, yet our performances are just not up to scratch at the moment.
They're not, very disappointing, and I know that they'll be obviously as disappointed as anyone in terms of the performances. If you look at the batting, Michael, we've struggled to score 300 as a batting unit. I think we might have gone over 300 twice in our last 12 innings as a collective. And as you know, that's not going to win first-class matches. In fact, it almost won't win a one-day international now. But when you look at our spine and we look at, for example, Patterson, Enriquez, Hughes, experienced players, decent first-class records, and then, as you say, put around that players such as Sanger and Jilks, etc., then certainly we would have been expecting better performances. I think with the ball, we've performed better than with the bat. But a bit of the story of the season has been allowing teams to get away. So we've had them in trouble, you know, 5 for 150, 6 for 150, and they've got through to high 200s, 300. It's hard to put a finger on it, you know, particularly in my role. It's hard when I'm not really close to it, but very disappointing. I can point to those statistics as a worrying part of why we've probably started this season particularly slow in the Shield.
Well, the Sixers WBBL side, sorry, they've certainly been the shining light at the moment.
They have, almost one to the other. We're concerned about the Blues. We care deeply about them. We care deeply about the WBBL Sixers. And they've really come from two seasons of underperformance to a season where they've really shot the lights out so far. So, a record 11 wins out of 14, 2 losses, 1 washout. And just playing with a consistency of approach and a freedom, but intelligently is how I'd put it. And I'm not sure I've seen intelligent cricket played throughout the summer, but I think I have through all sorts of competitions. But I think I have with our Sixers side. They've chased, I think, maturely. And we've seen that, I think, in the development of Ash Gardner, who will be player of the tournament, is a top wicket taker, second highest run scorer. And I think testament to her development was the way that she paced a chase with Elise Perry on the weekend. So, it's great to see a Sixers side. The top six would be easily, I think, the top six in the country. And really for that, got a final at North Sydney Oval on Saturday afternoon. I'm sure it will be a sellout. And we hope the girls can go one better and pick the title up, which would be fantastic.
Lee, where's Phil Jakes at? I saw a bit of stuff in the media last week with his job being under some pressure. He's the coach. He's one of the leaders. I know when you're not performing, that always comes back onto the leaders. But from your perspective, how long is his contract for and where do you sit?
I think it's been made public that Phil's in his last season of the existing contract, Michael. So the plan with Phil was always going to say, there's a break, a natural break when the BBL kicks in and Phil doesn't coach a BBL side. To at that junction to really sit down and review where we're at and where we're going. So that's the current status. You're right, and Phil knows too. That as a coach, it's not solely about results, Michael, but it's largely about results. But it's also about the development of your players within your squad and the playing philosophy and how you're bringing that team through. So there are a number of elements to that discussion that will occur with Phil, but he's as aware as anyone that the legacy, the history of the Blues, the fact that as a coach you're there to get results and develop players. So it was always planned that there'd be a review. I think there's one more Shield game after that, and then we'll go from there.
Then circling back to the BBL, with it coming up off the back of what we've witnessed at international level, I mean, why are you confident, Lee, that the BBL will deliver what the Aussie team couldn't, I guess, in regards to public interest, into engagement, participation from crowds, etc.?
Slightly different market. I think slightly different following in a way, in the fact that we've got club following. So, we've got a strong band of Sixers supporters. We know last year there wasn't a lot of BBL played in Sydney. This year we've got a full schedule, a full market. So to say we're confident is probably not quite true. We're turning over every stone, so we're leaving no stone unturned to the stadiums as full as we possibly can, and I think that's really, really important for cricket that we do that. So we saw the attendances recently. We're doing all we can to drive those loyal fans of Thunder and Sixers into the grounds, into the games. We've got one of the best schedules we've had for a while with BBL. So there are a lot of things going for us, and I think the Sixers squad has always delivered. It's as strong as ever. The Thunder, I think, today have announced or are announcing the left armer Faruqi from Afghanistan to replace Willie. So I think that's exciting in a way, and may well help us bring a following to the Thunder that hasn't been there before. So to answer your question, I unfortunately don't have a crystal ball. I'd look into it and say we're going to fill the stadium, but we're doing everything we can, and I think BBL this year will be a great spectacle. We've got Alex Hales playing for the Thunder, we've got David Warner coming into the Thunder towards the tail end of this season as well. So there's a lot of things to look forward to, I think.
You mentioned Dave Warner. I think it's no secret that if he was given the opportunity to captain the Sydney Thunder, he'd take it with both hands. And now we see the change in the player code, allowing a player to go through an appeal and have bans lifted, etc. Does Cricket New South Wales have a role in that engagement or that process, whereby, you know, I'm sure you'd love to see it facilitated as quickly as possible, if someone of with that sort of profile being afforded that opportunity if he wanted it?
Yeah, absolutely support David. You know, we've played a part in the process so far in terms of requesting Cricket Australia to review that, as the ACA, I think, has played a pivotal role in that too. So no, we're very, very supportive of that being reviewed. We're supportive of David, playing. And I don't quite know what that leadership role looks like. It'll be over to Trevor Bayliss and the crew at Thunder. But whatever it looks like, there will be a leadership role for David, whether it's formal or informal. So yeah, we certainly support a review of it and think it's the right decision. And you know, happy to support and willing to support David through it as much as he needs.
And I guess, Lee, after a couple of COVID-interrupted years, how's club and community cricket, juniors and seniors looking across the board, just what you're hearing anecdotally and the evidence you're seeing? Are players coming back? Because I'm sure players probably sat out last summer, for instance.
They did. And once again, we've had some challenges around our vast state, with obviously ongoing flooding, what have you. But what we're seeing is certainly more players registering than last year. So we've seen a good bump. We're probably keeping pace with 2019-20, so pre-COVID numbers. So that's really heartening. We've set some really aspirational targets in the 5 to 12-year-olds, because that's the most important area for our sport, is to get as many 5 to 12-year-olds playing out as possible, and that's the top of the funnel. So we're looking to almost double our numbers there for this season, which is aspirational. But in terms of juniors, seniors, we're looking at registrations being up. Girls are up as well. So, yeah, it's looking great. And that's just testament to our huge volunteer cohort. Yeah, I've been through so much over 3 years and still stick at it. One of the challenges we've had is that we've implemented a new player registration live scoring system this year, which has not gone smoothly, as sometimes technology doesn't. So, yeah, I think that might have held back a few too. So we're working on that as much as we can. But it looks really positive, and it's great to see cricket being played on our grounds.
Lee, you're always forthright and clear, and we really appreciate your time, and enjoy the rest of the summer.
Thank you, guys. Cheers.
Dave Stanley, good morning to you.
Jared Middleton, what's doing, brother?
Just chilling.
Yes. How good? How are we, pup?
Doing my thing, buddy.
Doing my thing. I tell you what, how good's a bit of blue sky?
Oh,
bit
mate.
Good juju, good vibes for a Thursday, boys. Thursdays, I remember in Brisbane, I don't know what it was like down here in Sydney, but Thursdays were uni night in Brisbane. I remember I went to uni for a bit and then deferred, and then obviously never made it back, but you'd still go to uni night anyway. And it was just something about the Thursday night. You'd lead into Friday, and then you'd be there. So what was it in Sydney? Where would you go on a Thursday night in Sydney?
Yeah, no, the Greenwood.
Yeah, the Greenwood Club, Tavern, Greenwood North Sydney. Tavern.
Yeah, North Sydney used to be a big Thursday night haunt. There was a place called Berry Street Tavern, Blueberries. Pup, remember that? On the corner?
Blueberries.
I went to Greenwood. I used to go to Greenwood all the time. The other place, there was the establishment when that first started in George Street, was massive on a Thursday.
And there were places
straight after work drinks.
Actually, there was a pub across the road from Sydney Uni. I think it's called the Alfred, but it was colloquially known as the Gross. And I think it's still there, actually. Put it this way, it was pretty much anything goes in that joint. So yeah, no, though Thursday nights was uni night back in the day as well. DS.
I love it.
Down in Canberra, I know that uni night down there used to go off as well. I got caught up down there a couple of times during, I used to go down there. Actually, one of my best mates was down there, so I used to get involved in their uni nights.
You'd go on tour. I love it, Minnow. I can't wait for your book to come out one day.
It won't be happening.
I can't wait for it. What would you call it? I know, pup, you've had a book, but if you had to call it something, what would you call your book? What would you call your book, Middo?
What was pup's called?
Yeah, what was yours called?
My story.
How long did that take to come up with, pup? Like when you sat down at the marketing meeting, what can we come up with?
Yeah, I don't think I came up with it.
My story. Would you do it again?
No chance.
No chance.
My God. No way.
Can you still buy it, pup?
I got no idea.
What would you name yours, Mido?
Oh, I don't know.
If you had it?
Last thing I'd be thinking
ladies
of.
Someone, day.
It's ladies Day. Someone it's asked me the other day and I'd call it One Day.
Just battling.
I'd call it One Day.
One Day what?
Just One Day. That's it.
Okay.
Just One Day. I don't know.
Well, wouldn't you call it All Day? Isn't that your little tagline?
I thought about that all day as well. Day Nighter, yes. Day Nighter. And, well, there you go, Mido. Think about what your book would be called. Because there'd be some good content in it, I'm tipping.
I'm thinking, I was thinking actually about, you were talking yesterday, if you're on death row or whatever, the last meal.
The last meal, yes.
Yeah. I added a few more.
Okay, what have you added?
Well, the pork belly at China Doll, which, you know, only happens once a year. I reckon that is as good as it gets.
Okay.
I added that to the list. I was thinking about it driving home yesterday.
See what I mean, though? This is good. Yeah. You've thought about it. Like, I'll never forget one. There was, it was actually Ross Taylor put out a tweet. This is years ago when he was celebrating his birthday, the famous Kiwi cricketer. He had a bottle, I think he had a couple of bottles of Grange and a bucket of Dirty Bird, a bucket of KFC. And he said, I could have this for the rest of my life. So, I mean, and then yesterday we had some texts on the text line too, people saying, you know, the roasts, they'd go the roasts mm-hmm. as their last meal.
What about the old Pizza Hut all you can eat?
Yes. Oh, take yeah, Tuesday night. Take yeah. your Tupperware containers.
What about the old Sizzler?
Yes.
Sizzler, you could fight over the salad bar, throw a few carrots at each other.
I like it.
Get your head under the ice cream.
They don't do any of that anymore, do they?
Cheesy bread? I don't know. I think like, Sizzler probably went bust.
There you go. When was the last time we went to a buffet? There you go.
Hotel down in Melbourne a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, actually, yeah, you would have been. Yeah, there you go.
Last time I stayed at the hotel.
Yeah, but outside of that,
you never go. They're not as prevalent as they once were, like you say, with the Sizzlers. What was the other joint? I was going to say the Lone Star, but that wasn't really a buffet, was it?
I've never been to the Lone Star in my life. There you go. Hey, boys, on the show today, we're going to try and make a quid. Here we go. We're going to chat with, firstly, David Eustace after 9:30. A lot of our punters and listeners love hearing David come on. He tips winners regularly for the Mar Eustace stable. So just after 9:30, we'll chat with David. We'll chat with Peter Snowden, Angela Davies, Michael Maxworthy, Chris Roots, and going to start the program with Ben Smith, a name that we're seeing now back in the form guide. Obviously, Ben had that time off away from training, that forced time off away from training. So we'll chat with Ben and we will, as I said, try and find you some winners on this particular Thursday. It's a cracking day outside, gents. Go and enjoy yourselves.
Thank you, Dave.
And we'll catch you tomorrow from 5:30. The boys will be back. Jared Middleton, Michael Clark, and Laurie Daly.